Welcome to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. Journey with us as we discuss the life of a gentleman and how we can gain more respect and confidence with lessons in life, etiquette, and personal style. Each week, we will bring engaging discussions, thought-provoking interviews, and tips on upgrading your personal style. We are all a work in progress. Let's take this journey together. Let's live the life of a gentleman. Welcome back, everyone, to the Life of a Gentleman podcast. This week, we would like to welcome you into 2017. It's a new year, same show. And again, we are so thankful that you've taken the time out of your schedule to listen to us. I'm Richard Taylor, your host. And this week, I'm joined with my co-host, Deandra Marie. Deandra, how's it going today?
I'm doing really well today. And you know what? I really like that you said new year, same show. I enjoyed that play on words there. How was your holiday? How was that?
Everything was great. You know, I'm just excited to be here in 2017 because, you know, the life of a gentleman really over the past 6 months has grown and developed. And we've brought in so many different people that I'm just pumped up to get the new year rolling and see what everybody has to bring to the table. We've touched base with our contributors and they're ready to go. So I'm ready, Deandra. I'm excited for 2017.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, very, very excited to see, you know, what is in store for us this year. You know, we started again, like you said, less than a year ago, and we've been able to get people on that contribute and have, you know, consistent segments. And so cheers to 2017 and whatever that has in store for us.
Yeah, definitely. So today I thought we'd have you come on as the co-host and we could kick around some ideas back and forth. And, you know, before we got online, we were talking about casual dress. So perhaps we could use that as the topic for today. What do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I think it's very important because sometimes you don't want to have to deal with the pressure of always having to dress up. And sometimes you go to places where it doesn't always call for you to wear a tie and a suit and what, you know, whatever else. So I think casual dressing is definitely a topic we should touch on.
All right, let's dive into it. Now, everybody's going to have a different definition of casual dress. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, for some people, they hear casual dress and they might show up to an event, you know, pretty much wearing some joggers and a T-shirt, you know. But then there's other people that hear casual dress and they might come with some slacks and a sports coat. So how do you go about defining casual dress for yourself?
Great question. I think it's levels to casual dressing, just like it's levels to, you know, dressing more dapper. I think at the bottom of casual is the joggers, the sweatpants. A step up from that, you know, probably be like the jeans and things of that nature. Sneakers are definitely in casual. Wow. I don't think I ever really thought about what super casual is. I just know casual is when I'm not dressing how I normally do, which is, you know, a blazer, a tie, a button up, you know, dress shoes and things, or slacks, things like that. So anything that's not that is casual.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it's funny, too, because the way that the fashion industry or the general public would define casual, it does kind of vary like we've been talking about. But, you know, at the top, you're saying there's a business environment where perhaps if you're in an executive field or executive position, you have to wear a suit. But then there's other fields where it's business casual. And then after that, it's casual. You know, a lot of places where I've worked, they've had casual Fridays. And what that meant is you were allowed to wear jeans or chinos on that day. And while the rest of the week, you had to wear slacks, you know. So you're right. You can go casual is a big, broad spectrum. So that's why I thought it'd be fun to talk about it and just give some ideas how you can look casual, but at the same time, still, like you said, look dapper.
Right, right. So I guess my first tip for casual dress is to, You know what? I would say to have at least one pair of sneakers. You know, I know there's a lot of people that dress up so much that, oh, I don't even have sneakers. You know what I mean? And I think you should probably have one pair of sneakers at least, or a pair of like knockarounds, but still that are still fashionable. You know, they're not old and dirty, you know. Just some go-tos. So when you want to just kind of chill out and you do want to dress more casual, you do have the shoes to go with it, because nothing is worse than mixing casual and just a complete dapper. You know what I'm saying? Like, it looks kind of awkward to wear joggers and a t-shirt with like monk strap shoes. It's just, it doesn't fit. So you should probably have at least one pair of like good sneakers.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm one of those people who really doesn't wear sneakers that much. But like you said, I have two pair. I have one pair of Air Max, and then I have some all white polo sneakers that I like for the summertime, because I mean, white shoes in the summertime is great, and you put on some no-show socks and, you know, you're still presentable in my opinion, but you're right. You know, it's good to have a little bit of everything in your wardrobe, because there's certain times where I'm not saying you can't show up, you know, dressed to kill, but you don't always have to. Let's say you're going to a baseball game. I mean, you probably want to be comfortable.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And okay, I mean, I like the two shoes that you have. You said the polo and the Air Maxes. Those are really good shoes to have. And that's another thing. You don't have to I'm not telling you to get Jordans here. You know, you don't have to buy the most expensive pair. They have a lot of casual sneakers out here. And I think you made a good point, because I have some polo sneakers as well. Sometimes where whoever your favorite brand is, they do make casual sneakers which aren't as sporty, you know, as like Air Max or something like that, and still give you that casual look, but it's still a sneaker. So that I feel like is a tip inside of a tip. And I thank you for that, Richard.
That's a good one. Hey, my tip that I have too, and another one for casual dress, would be a nice pair of chinos. And I'm thinking about right now, it's winter time where I'm at. I think where you're at, we're both experiencing snow and cold weather. So you can go casual with a nice pair of chinos, a great pair of boots. I think that's the other shoe, along with sneakers, that there's so many different looks and options that you're still going to look really stylish and dapper. You know, maybe some dark jeans or some nice chinos with a good pair of boots and a great sweater. And then, of course, where we're at, like we said, we have to have a nice overcoat. So you can have a nice overcoat and even a winter cap or a beanie on, and you're still going to look like a gentleman, but you're not fully suited out, if you will.
Oh, I definitely agree with you. And I really like chinos because they are very versatile. Like, you are able to, you know, depending on where you work, you can wear chinos and dress it up and nobody will really notice. But they're also great because you can wear them whenever you want. You know, you could wear them with sneakers and just a t-shirt. And to be completely honest, I don't have a pair of jeans. Like, my chinos are like my jeans, sort of, when it comes to casual dressing. Like, I do not own one pair of jeans, but I have quite a few pair of chinos, because they're just, again, they're versatile. You can wear them with sneakers, you can wear them with, again, monk strap shoes, and it'll still be fine. So chinos and boots, like, again, like you said, boots are definitely something else to wear.
Yeah, I would give chinos one of the most the award for, I guess, one of the most versatile pieces of clothing that's out there, because like you said, you can dress them up, you can dress them down. So as we're going through this discussion, I'm kind of thinking that, you know, we kind of started off talking about shoes, now we talked about pants, so I guess we'll just keep moving and working our way up. What do you think about casual looks, you know, for your tops? What are some of your go-to ideas?
Well, I just want to put out there that I was really going to ask you the exact same question you asked me. So we're on the same page. I'm not a polo type of gal. you know, as far as like polo shirts. I don't know. I used to be with them. I still think it is a casual look, and it still gives you that preppy sort of look, you know, so you're not, I guess, completely dressed down if you're not comfortable completely dressing down. It's not a personal favorite of mine. T-shirts are very casual, so it really depends how you wear it, because you could wear a t-shirt with sweatpants, or you could wear a t-shirt with, you know, you could dress up a t-shirt depending on the t-shirt. You could put a blazer on with it, so on and so forth. For me, I don't know, I could still wear a button-up, to be completely honest. I mean, as long as it's not, you know, made of, you know, like the silky material, like that silky type of material, you know, like the I guess they're called dress, like actual dress shirts, where, you know, it's for like specific gatherings. But I'll still wear like a cotton button up, and I still think that's casual. Again, it depends on the pattern of the shirt as well. You know, plaid, I probably wouldn't wear a plaid shirt because it is a little more dressy. It's a lot more specific. But if it's just like a regular striped button up or just plain, you really could pull that off, I think, as far as tops go.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think, you know, another award winner, if you will, for versatility would be the Oxford shirt for, like you said, it's just a button up. Generally, they come in a lot of plain colors or simple patterns like a stripe. And the thing about those that's really great, you know, I've had this discussion with my brother from time to time, and he wears a lot of white Oxford shirts, I mean, year round. And it's kind of funny, like, you know, you open up his closet, you're probably going to see like 10 white Oxford shirts. And those things are super versatile because, you know, in the summertime, you can untuck them or tuck them in, either way, or you can roll up the sleeves a little bit, and it's even a little bit more casual that way. So ever since he kind of brought that out to me, I've been wearing a lot more of those Oxford shirts in the white, blue, and tan or cream. And they pretty much match up with, you know, any type of chinos that you have. And it's a real good look. And if you want to throw a blazer on, you can. If you want, like I said, if you want to roll up the sleeves and, you know, toss the baseball around or the football around, you don't look out of place either way. You know, it's a real cool look.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And another added, I just thought of this. If you're still tempted to, like, wear a tie, which we'll get into that because you can casually wear a tie. But if you're just not trying to wear a tie and you're trying to keep it casual, I would suggest investing in one or two collarless or Mandarin shirts. They're interchangeable, the word. They're collarless, they're button-ups, but they're still super casual, you know, because it's casual because there's no collar. So, but you still get that really nice look because it's a button-up. So you could invest. I know Zara definitely has some. I'm not really sure where else sells them. I know I have a couple from Zara, and I know they keep those in stock like they do their Oxford shirts. And I think they're having a sale. So, you know, whenever they have a sale and, you know, just try one out. I didn't buy two at one time. I bought one. I really liked how it looked. So, you know, just try one out. I think that would help, especially if you're trying to keep it completely casual and not wear a tie or anything like that.
No, you're 100% right. And that's one of those shirts that will get you noticed. And also, like you said, people don't wear it all the time, but I was watching Shark Tank last night, and there was a guy that was presenting to the sharks on there. He had on the collarless shirt, he had on the chinos, and he had on a blazer, and he looked great, and I really noticed it last night. And then so you mentioned it today, and I'm like, yeah, you're spot on with that. That was a great tip, so appreciate that one.
Oh, thanks. So I guess my final tip would be, you know, you can casually wear a tie. So it's all in the way you wear it, though. You know, as long as everything else is casual, you can just throw on a tie. And again, don't let it be one of the like silky, super patterned up tie. You know, let it be fun, or let it be kind of just plain cotton tie. And you could still wear that with your chinos. You can still wear that with your button up. You can still wear that with your sneakers. And it will look really nice. You know, it's a nice combination of the two. So like I said, casual is just really multifaceted. You can play around with it a lot more. You just, you know, have to know how to play it, I guess.
Yeah, sometimes it takes a little confidence. I know our fellow contributor, Dennis Styles, a lot of times he will wear a t-shirt with a blazer over top of it. And you can pull that look off. It's casual. It's fun. And like you said, with the casual look with the tie, my go-to tie for that is a knit tie, because and usually a plain pattern, and it kind of pulls the look all together. Like you said, you can switch out. You could wear that with boots. You could wear that with sneakers. You could wear that with monk straps, brogues. Doesn't matter. And you've got these casual looks. So hopefully we've helped some people out today. And I'm pretty much thinking we could wrap this one up, Deandra.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we really covered every piece of an outfit that you could possibly wear. And, you know, of course, as more ideas come to us, we'll just touch on the topic again. But I think right now, this is a good start for some people.
Yeah, you're right. We're going to have to revisit this one. I'm looking forward to doing that. But at this time, you ready to get into the interview?
Oh, I'm ready.
Let's do it.
Here's a brief word from our sponsor. This podcast has been brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel. Visit them online for a great selection of neckties, pocket squares, and menswear accessories. Want to really step up your style? Join their monthly subscription club. For $25 per month, you'll receive one necktie plus four additional matching accessories. And now it's time for the segment we like to call The Gentleman's Look. A look into fashion, style, and accessories. This is The Gentleman's Look.
Welcome back, everybody, to the segment that we have come to enjoy when we have a special guest come on and join us on the podcast. And that man is none other than Steve Nunez. You may know him on social media as The Social Cut. Steve, how's it going today?
Hey, Richard, how's it going? Thanks for having me back on your show.
Yeah, definitely, man. We always love having you come on, and the feedback's been great. You know, the audience loves you, the producer loves you, so you always bring a lot of fun to the show, so thanks for doing it, too.
Hey, man, it's always a good time being on here, man. Just out here trying to have some fun and give some advice to some people, huh?
Yeah, that's what we do. So today, what do you have in mind? I'm excited to hear what you have going for us.
Well, like I said, we want to have some fun here with men's fashion, and since we're starting the new year, I thought it'd be a perfect time to do men's fashion trends that need to die in 2017. What do you think of that?
That's good. I like the title. I like where you're going with it. I got to see what's on this list. Let's do this one. Let's do this one.
Let's start off with the first one, Richard. We always, you know, we're casual. We like to wear t-shirts. We're not wearing our suits or dressing up. So the first trend that needs to die in 2017 is band tees for bands you don't listen to. So this happens all the time.
Yeah.
So, this is only good fun, guys, so no one get hurt. But seriously, guys, I go to the mall, I'm walking around, and I see 15-year-old kids wearing Guns N' Roses t-shirts or an NWA t-shirt. And they have no idea who these bands are, or rap group, or hip-hop, rappers. And I'm like, they just see this store, and they end up buying it, and they have no idea who they are. And it just looks silly. And, you know, if you listen to the group, then that's great, but seriously, guys, if you don't listen to that music or to that band, leave this t-shirt alone. Don't wear the t-shirt.
Yeah, I like that one. As soon as you said it, I was already laughing because I knew where you were going with it.
Yeah, so that's I think that's the biggest trend that needs to die, because right now all stores, all brands are making band t-shirts, and I think you should probably wear something that you like. That way, you know, you won't look silly in it.
Yeah, you're exactly right, man. Don't follow the crowd, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah. So, I'm ready for the next one. Ready?
I'm ready. Let's hear it.
All right. Another trend that was huge in 2016 that we all seen, and I kind of fell into it. I was wearing a couple of these things, but I think it's time to let it go, and that's writing on every piece of clothing. Do you know what I'm talking about, Richard?
Yeah, like, you mean like prints, like words and slogans and things like that?
Yeah. So I'm talking about when you buy a bomber jacket or a blazer, you look at the back of the sweater or the hoodie, and there's writing on the back of it, and it's just random writing. And everyone was wearing it in 2016. And for me, it's, you know, I want a nice blazer, a nice bomber jacket without all the writing. You know, there's writing on pants, there's writing on your hat, there's writing on your sweater. And I think that's, I think we need to tone it down now, guys. And for 2017, let's go with something more, with a cleaner look, something more traditional without all the writing on the clothing, you know?
No, you're right. And that's something, like you said, for years that's kind of been debated, because, man, it can really date you, you know, really quickly. It just, I don't know, it's just not a classic look. So I like that you put that one on the list. I got to agree with you there.
Exactly. Yeah, I fell into it about a couple of things that, you know, they're trendy. But like I said, it's getting, I think, out of hand now with writing on pants and your sweater, on your hoodie, on your hat. And it's just, let's keep it clean and classic for 2017, guys.
Yeah, that sounds good. Let's do it.
All right, here we go. So this is another huge trend that was big here in 2016 that we need to let go in 2017, and that's the extra long tees. You know what I mean? The ones that go down to your knees.
Oh man, those should have been gone like 2 years ago, man. I'm glad you putting that on the list. That's good.
Exactly. So again, yeah, you're right. It was definitely not just 2016, but I don't know how long it's been around for, but it's been around for a while now, and I just never really quite caught that trend, and I never even used that trend. And it's these tees, I don't get it. They're all the way down to your knees, and to me, it just makes you look silly, you know?
Yeah, I never got into that one either. I remember Andre 3000 dropped a line one time. He said, to me, the white tee looks like a nightgown, you know? And man, ever since then, I thought, man, why are people still doing it? It just looks ridiculous.
Exactly. And I try to make sense out of it, Richard. For a second, I was like, you know what? Hold on. All right, so the tees are really long. You're down to your knees. Now, the only reason I would wear it, which would make sense to me, was if you tuck it in. That's the only explanation I had. Because, right? I mean, how many times do you have a problem with your t-shirts, or, you know, you button it, I mean, I'm sorry, you tuck it in, you raise your hands, and they untuck, right?
Right.
Well, if it's an extra long tee, you tuck it in, you put your hands up, it won't untuck. I mean, that's the only explanation I have.
You know what? It's funny that I had that problem too, and so, you know what? I think it's Hanes. They actually sell the extra long t-shirt that you can put. Uh-huh. And I buy those, but you're right. Only to tuck it in. You don't want it. You know, who would walk around with it untucked? It looks crazy. So
exactly. So yeah, I definitely didn't wear it. And I don't know. I just, that's something that definitely has to go up.
Perfect.
It's died in 2017.
Yeah, that's got to go, man. Yeah, that one. Man, take that one out back.
And all right, so now for the next one. So another hot trend in 2016 that, I don't know, I feel like 2016 was a year of going over the top, a lot of excessive accessories and styles and stuff. So I put here on my list, excessive bracelets. You know the bracelets, you wear the watch, people put like 5-10 bracelets next to your watch, and then you had another 5-10 bracelets on your right hand. And I don't know, people just went crazy with it, with bracelets this past year. Do you remember that?
I do, and we talked about it on one of the segments on the podcast. I'm glad you brought it up. I thought it was just me. I was kind of nervous when I brought it up on the podcast, but I'm like, man, it looked totally ridiculous because, you know, people had so many bracelets on, you know, it's like 4 inches thick. It was just getting out of control. You're right. Let's get rid of that one.
Yeah, exactly. So that was just a trend. I was like, you know, and I'm not going to lie, I did it too. I wore the excessive bracelets for a while. But afterwards, I was like, why am I wearing so... It's just, I don't know, it's just, man, it ended up being uncomfortable. It just didn't look right after a while. And I was like, you know what? I have to put this on my list for trends I need to die in 2017. Let's go back. I think this is 2017 is the year of back to basics, keeping things clean, simple, classic. So definitely, I'm going back just to a nice watch, you know, my wedding ring, and maybe one or two bracelets on the other hand, and that's it. And I think that looks a lot cleaner and a lot, you know, fancier, and definitely classic look.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I was going to say that if you've got a really nice watch, there's no need to have all those bracelets piled up on there. And then just like you said, one or two on the other hand, that's enough. I mean, mm-hmm. Come on, guys, cut it out. Yeah.
All right. And so now we're going to move on to hairstyles. So this is a touchy area here. I know some guys are going to get hurt and might get bothered. But I think it's time to let everyone know, guys. The hottest haircut of 2016, which we need to let it rest because my dad's starting to wear this haircut, the undercut hairstyle. again, I had that hairstyle. So if you guys take a look at my social media, you see my previous pictures from last year. I had the hairstyle, and now I've let it grow out. I'm actually letting it grow a lot longer. But this year, again, I think it's really back to basics, something clean, classic. So let's get a nice haircut, a clean fade. Again, back to basics, but let's leave that in 2016, guys. Everyone has it. And, you know, when your parents start wearing that haircut, I think that's when we need to let it go.
Yeah, that's how you know it's time to let it go. When you and your dad have the same haircut, there's a little problem. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Good one.
All right, Richard, and then I have here the last trend that needs to die in 2017, and everyone wore the heck out of this also, and that's the bandana around the neck. Remember the bandana around the neck? Everyone was wearing the bandana around the neck, casual, with your suit, whatever it is. And I don't know, it's just, I think we need to leave that alone in 2016. Bandanas, you know, you can wear it in your back pocket and around your head. I don't know. I just don't think you need to wear it around your neck, you know, unless you're going to rob a liquor store, maybe put it around your face, but not around your neck, guys.
Right.
We need to leave that alone. So those are my trends I have that need to die in 2017. What do you think about that, Richard?
No, that was a good one, too. The bandana thing, I never got on board with that either, so... Man, I was a little nervous when you brought up this list. I was sweating a little bit because I'm thinking, man, I hope he doesn't bring up something that I'm doing. But I'm happy to say that I don't have the fan tees. I don't have the writing on everything, the extra long t-shirts, or the too many bracelets. I don't have enough hair to get the hair one anyway, so I didn't have that one. And last but not least, the bandana. I'm safe. I made it. Steve. We're going to make it through 2017 looking classic. Yes. This year, man.
You got it, man. Yeah, I mean, at least I'm not going to lie. Like I said, some of these, I made the list on some of these, and I came up with the idea because my wife would make fun of me some of the things I wore, and I was like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I think, let me make a list of things that we need to leave alone, you know, this year. And it's a new year. Let's start fresh. You know, let's go back to basics, keep things clean and classic, and we'll have a good year for men's fashion.
That sounds good. We appreciate you coming on and giving us this list and how you come on every time and make us think about something different. We look forward to a good 2017 with you as a contributor on The Life of a Gentleman. And before you go, let everyone know your website or where they can follow you on social media and keep in touch.
You got it, Richard. So you guys, make sure you guys check me out on social media. I have my daily outfit of the day and also other men's grooming tips. You guys can check me out at The Social Cut. I also have a blog. Check it out, thesocialcut.com. And for more of these tips and just have a good time, you guys can check out my YouTube channel. It's The Social Cut. So there you guys have it. So make sure you guys check me out. And thanks for having me on, Richard. I really look forward to being back on here.
Yeah, definitely, Steve. I had a good time with this discussion. And so the next time you come back on, we'll be anticipating what you have to say because this was a lot of fun. Appreciate it, my man.
Richard, till next time, man. Thank you.
Take care. Hey, guys. Are you ready to enhance your style? I've got just the thing. Harrison Blake Apparel has an unbelievable deal. Get one necktie plus four matching accessories for just $25 per month. This monthly subscription club delivers style and convenience for an unbelievable price. Use code BTR at checkout for $5 off your first monthly package. That's one tie plus four accessories for $25. Go to harrisonblakeapparel.com. Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of The Life of a Gentleman, where we are once again joined by our resident business expert, Mr. John D. Carroll. He is the owner of Trace Coaching Services. He has so much experience in business, and over the past few weeks and episodes, he's been coming back on and helping us learn more about how we can improve as an entrepreneur or business owner. So, John, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Richard. I'm delighted to be back. Thank you for inviting me again.
Oh, we certainly appreciate it. I think I speak for the audience when I can say we are learning so much from these segments where we dive into the field of business and entrepreneurship. So looking forward to your subject today. Curious to know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what do we have on deck?
Well, I always appreciate your feedback and the comments from the audience as well. Today I want to segue into the next chapter of the sales and the actual selling part. You know, in the last segment we talked a little bit about sales preparedness and sales readiness. Some of the things that a new business owner, or any business owner for that matter, needs to be thinking about to be more effective once they interface with the client in selling their product or service. And a lot of times, like I mentioned in the last segment, the sales part gets overlooked in all of the activities associated with launching the business. And you're putting the business at risk if you're not putting more energy into the sales aspect. So today I want to talk about who are you selling to, because that's something that's a hot button with me in working with literally hundreds if not thousands of salespeople over my career. One of the things I run into a lot is when I talk to salespeople is they're not selling to the people that can buy or can write the check, so to speak, or sign the contract a lot of times. In fact, some of the research I've seen indicates that 60% of a salesperson's time is spent in front of people who either can't buy or will never buy their product or service. And when I drill down on that, Richard, with a lot of salespeople, it's a comfort issue. And I ask them, why are you spending so much time lower in the organization rather than calling on people that are the ultimate decision makers who can buy from you? And the comment I hear a lot of times is, A, they're comfortable spending time with those lower level people within the organizations. And the counterweight to that is they're not comfortable dealing with C-level executives. And that's something that we all have to get past, because if you're not calling on people that can sign the contract or write the check or make a buying decision, you're wasting valuable time and resources, not only yours, but the time and resources of the organization as a whole. And so what I encourage them to do is get uncomfortable, because as a salesperson, as you know, if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. And as a business, if you're not uncomfortable and you're not pushing the envelope, you're not going to be successful and you're not going to be able to stay ahead of the curve, so to speak, in selling your product or service. And so when I sit down with salespeople and I start drilling on this topic, a lot of them readily admit that they're not comfortable calling on decision makers, particularly if that decision maker happens to be a C-level executive in a Fortune 1000 company, for example. It begs the question, how do you expect to be successful selling anything if you're not comfortable?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, working with people that are authorized to buy your product and service. So today I want to give the audience several tips that I give to salespeople when I start working with them to help them overcome that fear of moving up in the organization. Because, as you know, with each C-level executive you deal with, their buying criteria and what's important to them is going to be different. You know, I encourage, for example, the first C-level executive to call on is the chief financial officer or the CFO. Why? Because CFOs tend to be more open to taking a sales call because they see everything going on in the organization, from inflows to outflows, from the operations side, the technology side, the sales and marketing side, etc. So they're looking for new and creative and expansive ways to help the business be more successful. So tip number one is do your homework. Figure out, first of all, who are the potential buyers for your product or service, because there may be multiple. And also, how do they buy? What their levels of authority are in terms of, you know, can they write a check for $1 million and authorize that purchase? Or what is that level of buying authority? And what criteria do they use to make a buy or no buy decision? And also, very important, and this comes from power-based selling, Richard, that I touched on in the last segment.
Right.
Who do those decision makers consult with on major purchases? Because it may be somebody that doesn't show up on the org chart, that's farther down the organization, but is a valued member of their team, that they value their opinions. And once you meet with them, they may be walking down the hall talking to this individual about your product or service to get their input.
Yeah, you're right. And I think the points that you mentioned about people being sometimes intimidated to go higher up that org chart, it's valid. I think that's why we tend to waste a little bit of time, kind of like creating busy work for ourselves when we know really that person can't make the ultimate decision.
Right. It's what they perceive that as is, to that point, is a no-risk scenario. You know, they can't help you, but they can't hurt you either, which may or may not be true. But the reason I drill on so much on doing your homework is the biggest complaint that I hear from C-level executives that I work with is that most of the salespeople that call on them aren't prepared to do business.
What do you mean by that, not being prepared? I'm just a little curious about that part.
They haven't done their homework. They haven't, for example, they don't understand the organization, the org chart, the dynamics of the interactions between the key executives. They haven't spent the time looking at their financial reports, their annual reports. They really don't understand how the business operates, to where they can have a conversation that's meaningful to that C-level executive. And what I encourage people to do is, if you can get your hands on it before you call on a C-level executive, particularly a COO or a CFO, try to get at least 1 to 3 years of their annual reports. Go through everything. Pick out some of the keywords that are highlighted in the executive summary. Look at their financial ratios. If you can compare their ratios to the competition, if you have those things available to you, how do they compare financially? Are they above the guide, below the guide, when they match up against the competition? And try to glean from that something that you can attach importance to when you sit down with that C-level executive. For example, if you're calling on a senior executive in a bank, Sheshinoffs is their resource and their frame of reference. If you can get access to, and they're, say they're a mid-sized commercial bank, you can look at their operating ratios and determine, because banks measure things on return on assets managed. So if you look at their ratios on return on assets managed and some of those key financial indicators, how do they stack up and match up with other mid-sized commercial banks within the state, within their region? And if you can find something to start the conversation off that goes, Richard, something like this: well, I noticed in looking at your last year's annual reports and comparing your financial data with Sheshinoffs and some of the other comparable mid-sized banks that you were substantially below the guide in this area. Is this something that's of concern to you? And if it is, how are you addressing it today?
I see. That's very detailed, the way you did that.
Yeah, and that way, what it says to them is, this person has taken the time to understand my business. They have found something compelling that is a gap in our performance when we match up against the competition. Now you have my attention. Now you can take the conversation forward.
Okay, yeah. I think that would be impressive to them as well, you coming in there with some background knowledge. So good point there.
Or if you're looking at calling on a law firm, for example, you know, the thing that's fundamentally important to them is profits per partner. So, and the same thing with a CPA firm. So if you're calling on CPAs or you're calling on attorneys, you know, that's something you want to hone in on. Which kind of leads me to tip number two, which is, have a goal in mind. Whether it's the first call or your final proposal presentation, make sure that you have a desired outcome for every meeting throughout every stage of the sales cycle with those decision makers, and ultimately with other key staff members that they're going to bring to the table through that proposal process.
These are all some great points that you're bringing out. Now, what's the next idea that you were going to mention for us?
I touched on it indirectly earlier, but be a problem solver. You know, what I encourage salespeople is, before you go in there, do a role reversal and think like the decision maker. What are they concerned about today in terms of those hot burning issues that they're losing sleep over? You know, once you've gone through their annual report and their financial data, are they concerned about sales? Are sales lagging? Are they concerned about profitability because they've been on a big expansion program and that's soaked up a lot of their available cash? Are they concerned about market value, competitive advantage? What is the thing that they're most concerned about? And then how can you help them in those areas? What I always ask the question is, what are the top three things that you're losing sleep over today? And then find one that you can hone in on that you can say to them, Richard, well, if I can do this, this, and this in this area to help you take this problem off the board, would you entertain a proposal from me? Well, what are they going to say, no? course not. They're going to say, tell me more.
Oh, that's a good approach, yeah. You get the door opened up a little bit.
And if you've done your homework, then you can zoom right in there and say, well, I've looked at your financial data in this area, and here's what I have spotted as a potential problem area that we can address with our product or service. Number four is net it out. When you're dealing with decision makers, time is money. So you want to make sure on every call that you're in front of them, have an agenda. And importantly, work on those agenda items together and gain agreement before you go in the door. That way you've already pre-positioned what you're going to talk about, and you're going to make that'll make the conversation go faster because it's already top of mind to them. Second thing is be brief. With them, cover the high points of your proposal and stay on topic. Don't deviate from what you've already agreed upon with the agenda that you want to talk about, unless they want to move you in another direction. And to that point, if they want more details, they'll ask. And another taboo I say is never run over your allotted time for the meeting. Again, unless they want to keep going. If you ask for 15 minutes, which I never did, I always ask for 30, but stay within the 30 minutes. And then, you know, spend the last 5 minutes summarizing and closing and positioning next steps. So they've already mentally made that jump through, okay, we've worked through this. Now, next time we get together, we're going to be doing this. Boom. And you can gain agreement right up front with them to do that. And then the final tip is, number five, is to follow up. In order to cultivate the relationship, you have to stay on course, even if the decision maker is not ready to buy. According to some of the statistics I've seen is 80% of the sales are made on the 5th through the 12th contact. So you've got to be persistent and you've got to stay engaged with them. But staying engaged isn't just touching base. It's all about each time you're in front of them bringing value to the table with you. So you continue to build on, in terms of those layers, build on the relationship with those decision makers.
I like that. You've laid out some practical steps that we can take to be effective in knowing who we can sell to. And actually, you actually taught us some techniques how to sell too. So we appreciate you giving us all these gems here.
Yep. And like I said earlier, if you're not uncomfortable, you're not growing. So I encourage everybody, Richard, to get uncomfortable. And to learn more about selling to decision makers, I would recommend 5 books for required reading. First one is Selling to Vito, that very important top officer, by Anthony Parnello. Second one is Swim with the Sharks Without Being Eaten Alive by Harvey McKay. The third one is The New Power-Based Selling by Jim Holden. Fourth is Selling to the C-Suite by Nicholas Reed and Dr. Stephen Bistrick. And then the fifth one is Selling Above and Below the Line by William Skip Miller. If you read those 5 books, you will be very well prepared to sit in front of any C-level executive and have a conversation.
Everybody, please take note of those books. And John, thank you so much. You came on once again, knocked it out of the park, gave us so much value. And we look forward to having you come back on next time so we can learn even more. But before we go, John, we really appreciate you coming on each week. And every time you're on the podcast, like I said, it's just a wealth of information. So let us know that website one more time.
Sure, it's TraceCoach, T-R-E-S, coach.com, and all my social media handles are TraceCoach, so you can find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, etc., via TraceCoach.
Well, John, thanks again, and we look forward to the next time we have you on The Life of a Gentleman.
All right. Thank you, buddy. Take care.
Well, gentlemen, that wraps up another edition of The Life of a Gentleman podcast. We want to sincerely thank you for taking the time to listen to the show today. I would like to give a special thanks to my co-host for this episode, Deandra Marie. Also, thank you to our contributors, Mr. John Carroll from Trace Coaching Services and Steve Nunez from The Social Cut. Thanks to both of those gentlemen for coming on and giving us some information to think about for the new year. We hope that you've enjoyed The Life of a Gentleman, and we'd like to ask you to continue to listening. And if you could, do us a favor. Rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. That would be wonderful. It only takes a minute to leave a review on iTunes, and we really appreciate the feedback, as well as having the opportunity to bring episodes like this to you each and every week. We look forward to next time. when we'll have on some more of our contributors and have another engaging and hopefully entertaining discussion that will also open up your eyes to the possibility of living this life of a gentleman. Thank you once again for listening, and until next time, take care.
These messages are brought to you by Harrison Blake Apparel, specializing in fashion accessories such as ties and lapel pins. Join the Harrison Blake Monthly Subscription Club. Each month, they deliver one necktie plus four additional matching accessories for only $25. This is the easy way to build or enhance your wardrobe. To learn more and subscribe, visit HarrisonBlakeApparel.com. These messages are also brought to you by DeAndra Marie, a young, talented female host who conducts interviews, event coverage, and produces the Life of a Gentleman podcast. For inquiries on how to be featured, please visit www.itsdeandramarie.com.